Did Don Draper really buy the world a Coke? Did Tony Soprano really die or just order more onion rings? The finales of our favorite shows can make us argue, make us cry, and make us crazy. From Spotify and The Ringer, I'm Andy Greenwald, and this is Stick the Landing, a new podcast where we'll be telling the story of modern TV backwards, one fade out at a time. Find Stick the Landing on Wednesdays on the Prestige TV feed, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode of The Town is brought to you by FX's Feud, Capote versus the Swans. The second installment in Ryan Murphy's Feud anthology tells the story of acclaimed writer Truman Capote, once a confidant to society's most elite women, whom he nicknamed the Swans. Starring Naomi Watts, Diane Lane, Chloe Sevigny, Calista Flockhart, Demi Moore, Molly Ringwald, and Tom Hollander. For your Emmy consideration, visit fxnetworks.com/FYC.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit jiffylube.com.
It is Monday, April 29th. If you look at the monthly Nielsen streaming ratings, as I do pretty religiously, you'll notice one of the services has been on a roll lately. It's Tubi, the free ad-supported television platform, or FAST channel as they're known. Tubi captured 1.6% of all streaming viewership on connected TVs in the U.S. last month. That's up 60% since debuting on the list over a year ago. That viewership percentage might not sound like a lot, but it's more than Peacock, more than Max, and about the same as Disney Plus, all three of which spend vastly more on programming. And its viewership is a lot more than Roku Channel and Pluto TV, two of its rivals in the FAST space. Tubi is free, of course, so it's not the same business model as these subscription platforms, and they're not making the $100 million shows to compete for Emmys. But it's some of the same licensed content that you'd find on SVOD services, old shows from the traditional studios, a bunch of them. And since 2021, Tubi has also carried original programming. They do lower-budget unscripted shows like TMZ Presents UFO Revolution, some adult animation, docs like Battle of the Beasts, Bigfoot versus Yeti, a lot of made-for-TV movies aimed at Black audiences. They're about to announce a new slate of shows that they're upfront. They even dabble in sports. Like when Fox aired the FIFA World Cup, Tubi would air the games 30 minutes after they ended. And most importantly, it's all free. I've always been a big believer in the power of free in the streaming space. There's a lot of consumers who just don't care enough to pay for content and don't mind ads. Specifically young people, people like Craig. They're reared on YouTube. They want something to put on when they're scrolling. 63% of the Tubi audience is cord cutters and cord nevers. And the business model for Tubi is to do licensed library deals and revenue shares with content owners, a la YouTube. Allows the content trove to be especially deep. But amid all the traction and the 78 million monthly active users, the jury's still out on whether Tubi or any of the FAST channels are great businesses. Back in 2020, Fox paid $440 million for the company, and Lachlan Murdoch, the CEO, loves to talk about its growth on earnings calls. It's much better than talking about the declining TV linear business that makes up most of Fox's revenue. But Tubi isn't profitable yet. That's the job of Anjali Sood, the CEO of Tubi. She's been in that job since last August when she took over for co-founder Farhad Masoodi. And before that, she was at Vimeo, the video site that she reinvented as a software company that serves video creators. She was there for 9 years, including taking Vimeo public as CEO. And now she's pivoted to a FAST channel in Tubi. So today we've got Anjali on the show, and it's the rise of Tubi, the state of FAST channels, and how good a business is free. From The Ringer and Puck, I'm Matt Bellany, and this is The Town. All right, we are here with Anjali Sood, who is the CEO of Tubi. Welcome.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, so I'll start with the softball question. And not because it's a softball, but because I'm legitimately curious about this and I have not seen coverage of it. Why do you think that you guys have seen such a rise in viewership over the past year? Because I'm seeing it month over month in the Nielsen numbers, and I'm hearing it just anecdotally. But what's the reason?
It's funny. So I joined Tubi 8 months ago, and I also asked myself this question. And the answer is probably less exciting than you might expect, Matt, which is it's because we're a really solidly executed combination of being free, of listening to our audience with a large on-demand library, and we're focused on serving that audience and showing them and giving them more of the things that they like. And it really is that simple.
But what does that mean? Is that a tech success or is that a content success?
It's a business model plus content success. So on the business model side, again, it is different to be 100% free, right? Mm-hmm. We're not asking you to subscribe to an ad tier or to a subscription tier. We're not trying to upsell you. The fragmentation and friction is reduced. And it's just as easy to start watching, you know, a movie on Tubi as it is to, you know, open up TikTok. And then the content library is quite differentiated in its size. So we have the world's largest on-demand library, over 240,000 movies and TV series, which is multiples, and I mean multiples more than others. And as much flack as Tubi's algorithm sometimes gets, we actually do a really good job of helping you find content and go down rabbit holes that you're really interested in. And we're seeing that model just resonate more and more. And I'd say more and more with younger audiences because their tastes and preferences around what's good and how they want to watch is evolving. And I think that's what you're seeing in Tubi.
Yeah, I noticed the stats on the demo is that almost half of the user base is between, what is it, 13 and 30?
And so over 60% of the audience are cordless, so cord cutters and cord nevers. And here's an interesting stat I was really surprised by. So 40% of our audience are not on other traditional streamers. So this is really, you know, this is what, when I joined, I got excited about because it shows that there is, I think, more and more an audience that they want to consume professionally produced, you know, long form content. They love movies and TV series, but the existing ecosystem is maybe not serving them the way that they're going to want to be.
Well, they want free. But it's interesting. When you were at Vimeo, you did an interview that I read last night where the big pivot at Vimeo was you decided to stop competing with YouTube and Netflix and other consumer video platforms and focus on the tools for creators to be successful on all platforms. And then you up and leave and go to a platform that is competing directly with YouTube and Netflix. So was that a change of heart or like, why did you do that?
For me, the reason why I wasn't bullish on Vimeo competing was because the roots of Vimeo was that we were an ad-free video player. The reason that filmmakers and creators flocked to Vimeo was because we didn't put ads on their content and they didn't want their documentary, you know, to be on YouTube next to a viral cat video. So our whole value prop was ad-free. And that's where I struggled to see how a pure SVOD model could work for Vimeo. You know, I think the content costs were going to be really high. The churn was going to be hard to battle. And it just didn't seem like a model we could win at. Whereas supporting the people behind the camera with tools did feel like a model we could win at. And the reason it's different with Tubi is because Tubi is free. It's 100% ad supported. And I do think that's the future of where this sort of the next generation, how they're going to consume content, because ultimately we're not competing with FAST or streaming, we're competing with social and gaming and anything that someone chooses to spend their time being entertained on.
But in going into the originals space, you are competing with the subscription services in a little, in some ways, especially now that they all dive further into their ad-supported cheaper tiers. First of all, what percentage of your consumption is the originals?
it's not a major percentage today. And it's a very small percentage of our library, as you can imagine.
Okay, so why do it? Pluto does not. Pluto, a big competitor, does not.
So Tubi has actually experimented, I would say, with originals for the last 2 years. And we actually, I think we've done about 200 films over the last 2 years. And we've learned a lot from that experimenting. And I think what you're going to see is that we are going to use originals. It's not going to be the primary type of content you'll see on Tubi. Our bread and butter is that library and really listening to our audiences and investing more in the things that resonate with them. But you are going to see us use originals more and more to speak to the next generation. And the reason we're doing that is because we recognize that the market is getting pretty crowded. And it's interesting, if you ask most people now, and we've seen this in surveys, people can't even recall the name of the streamer they watched the show on.
No, it's amazing. Even on some of the most iconic hits, like I always use the example of Ted Lasso, people don't even know it's on Apple TV, and that's their biggest show.
Exactly. And so I think in a market like that, you do have to kind of stand for something in a sea of sameness. You need a programming voice that says to an audience, we are the destination for you. And we at Tubi have committed that we are going to skate where the puck is going. We are going to focus on younger, female forward, diverse audiences, the audiences that don't feel as represented in sort of the prestige content you see today. And what you're going to see us do, and we've just embarked upon this, is orient our original programming to speak to that audience. So we've just premiered, I think, about three titles. You'll see more to come that we think really kind of reflects that strategy.
Isn't that just an ad play, though? Isn't it a messaging to advertisers? You know, yeah, most of the hours viewed comes from the licensed stuff, but our brand is this, and we show our brand through the originals. It's not that different from what the cable networks used to do, where 90% of the viewership on AMC or TNT was reruns of, you know, the old Chuck Lorre shows or Big Bang Theory or whatever, but they were the network of Breaking Bad and Mad Men. And even though nobody watched those shows, or at least not as many as some of the other stuff, they could sell advertisers on being a prestige outlet. Like, the originals do that for you, right?
I have no idea if the originals will do that for us, but I will tell you very sincerely that for the perspective that I have is like, the only reason advertisers are going to, you know, spend money is if we're actually delivering them the engaged audience that they need.
Yeah.
And today, I used to be a CMO, and I have talked to many CMOs since joining, and I can tell you that one of the biggest problems, if you're a CMO, is that you want to reach the younger audience. You can't find them on traditional TV or streaming. Where you can find them is on social, which is not brand safe. And it's really hard to get your brand message out there when there's a doom scroll. So I would say, you know, we have to prove that this model can work. But here's why I think it can work. Mm. First, I think younger generations care more about authenticity than like critical acclaim. And I think culture's bottoms up. And because we have this mass library, we can get a better sense for what's resonating. And I do think we can make originals at the right price that will resonate with the audience, actually engage them, actually get lots of viewership. And then we're selling something to advertisers that is a real, repeatable, scalable product.
So you are sort of the, I don't want to say the jewel, but you are something that Lachlan Murdoch, the CEO of Fox, talks about a lot. Loves to talk about Tubi on the earnings call, loves to cite the growth, loves to cite the revenue. What he doesn't talk about very often is profits. And I assume that is for a reason. Is Tubi profitable, or what is the event horizon for Tubi becoming profitable in your eyes?
Tubi can be profitable when it chooses to be. We're not profitable today. We've been very smart not to burn billions of dollars on content. And right now, our P&L is very much a conscious choice, because as we sit and look at the market, you can see the momentum. We have a strategy we're excited about. So we're investing in growth. You know, I've had the experience of taking businesses to profitability in the past. And from everything I can see, both in the market and in Tubi, Tubi's path to profitability very much, it comes from growing and actually just better monetizing our audience and our engagement. and continuing to build that audience and engagement, it doesn't come from cost cutting. And that's a very different place to be. And it gives you the freedom to prioritize your customer.
This episode is brought to you by Hulu. Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone star in Hulu's limited series Under the Bridge, a chilling true crime story based on the acclaimed novel. Hailed as a riveting and heartbreakingly realistic work by the Chicago Sun-Times and featuring excellent performances, according to Time Magazine, the series is for your Emmy consideration in all categories, including Outstanding Limited Series and Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Limited Series for Keough and Gladstone. For more information, visit fyc.hulu.com.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
How much do you worry about what I mentioned, the rise of the cheaper ad tiers on services like Netflix and Max and Disney Plus? Is that a real threat to your ability to grow if there is a certain consumer who wants free, but there's a lot of consumers that just want cheap?
The broader market getting competitive, yeah, that makes it harder. It also forces you to focus and understand what you're truly differentiated at and get better at it. And overall, I think we have these unique advantages because of our business model, because of where we sit in the ecosystem. You know, we don't have to worry about cannibalizing this business or our advertiser-oriented revenue stream. We live and die on that. That's the only thing that we have to do really well. So I think we have some advantages. I also just think if you look at the tailwinds, they are still in our favor. There are going to be billions of dollars in entertainment ad budgets that will move from linear to streaming. And so it's a share game. It's going to be who's going to take more of that share. And my job, and I think our strategy, is how can we position ourselves to be truly incremental to advertisers, truly differentiated through the nature of our audience to get there. And I'll take an optimistic perspective. I actually think Amazon will help accelerate some of that movement.
How so? Oh, you mean just the overall ecosystem?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you just from my time so far in the industry, inertia is a powerful thing. It's very hard to shift even things like where advertisers spend and how they spend. It's slow. It takes time until a catalyst helps move it along. And I think that Amazon, you know, coming in so intentionally in the market is going to be a catalyst. And I think if we do what we believe we can do well, we will look more like the Amazons of the world in terms of the options for an advertiser than sort of the more legacy and traditional options.
Do you think Amazon will collapse Freevee into the main Prime Video service and just have that be the ad-driven free tier of Amazon Prime?
Well, as an ex-Amazonian, I'll say, whether they do it formally or not, I think in practice, that is what will happen.
Yeah. Seems like a logical message to be sending. And a lot of these kind of vertically integrated, Pluto, I mean, God knows what's going to happen at Paramount, but, you know, it makes sense to have that be the sort of top of the funnel. You don't really have that with Fox. You're not there to introduce people into another service. And you describe that as a positive, but isn't that potentially also a drawback because you're not maybe even supplemented or part of a larger streaming offering?
Like, I think it's true. We are both the top of our funnel and our whole funnel.
Don't forget Fox Nation. Don't forget Fox Nation.
We have no forced synergies of any kind. And it is true that in the future, over time, we of course want to have our own competitive advantages. We want to build our own moats that nobody else can build, like Amazon has been able to do. And I do think part of my job is to help find those win-win opportunities across Fox. And Fox has incredible IP, incredible content in many areas that we haven't really taken advantage of. Fox also has incredible relationships with advertisers that we also probably haven't taken as much advantage of. So I am going to look to do that, but very much, you know, when it serves and supports our strategy and our viewers. And I think it's one of the things that's been great about Fox is it's maybe very much encouraged that entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah, Rupert is the ultimate entrepreneur. Have you met Rupert yet?
I have.
Oh, what's your impression of him?
He's very engaged. And he's a Tubi fan.
You should tell him to come on the town. He's my dream guest. I would like to interview him.
I will pass that along. I highly doubt me asking will influence him at all, but I will definitely pass it along.
Black audiences. Tubi has had a lot of success with Black audiences. And, you know, the Saturday night movies have become a thing and it's sort of a destination. How did that happen? Or was it just sort of you guys fell into it and then leaned in?
It's the latter. It was not intentional to start. And then Tubi did lean in. And today, you know, there are thousands of films and shows that feature Black talent or are made by Black creators.
And you're doing originals, too.
And we have leaned in with originals as well. And what we've seen is that that is a community and a fandom that has felt not as well served by traditional Hollywood. And what we believe is that if you want to be culturally relevant, this is a really important community to engage. And we've also taken that same approach and we're starting to replicate and apply it to others. There's a whole bunch of areas where we see the same dynamics happening. And so I think you're going to see us, you know, both continue to do this and actually look to kind of replicate that model in many other areas.
One of the interesting things about services like Tubi is that you are often doing revenue share deals where you take the content, often either, you know, for a very low price, and then you pay out a revenue share. It's not unlike a YouTube situation. Does that give you essentially a bottomless content pool? Or is there a line where you guys say, well, okay, we could do a revenue share on this, but like, is it worth us hosting this? Where do you draw the line on what is a Tubi show and what isn't in your licensing stuff?
We don't know exactly where the line is. We're still figuring it out. Is there one? Yes. Have we met it? And we have a pretty large library and a lot of rev share titles. I don't think we've hit that line yet. You're going to see Tubi continue to invest and grow our rev share library and deals. And you're going to see us do it for the time being. We will likely hit diminishing returns at some point. But I can tell you from sort of looking under the hood, to date, we don't think we've hit that.
And I imagine there are surprises all the time on the things that resonate. Like someone told me that Columbo was a huge show. I don't know if it's on Tubi, but I know it was on other fast channels. Like, what are some of the surprise shows that are big on Tubi that you would never expect?
This is one where it wasn't a title that was doing well, but what we were seeing is like Western horror thriller content sort of doing well on Tubi. And so the team...
Westerns? Like Cowboys and Indians?
Yes, yes, yes. So then there's a Canadian Western horror TV series called Wynonna Earp. It was like picked up by Sci-Fi or, you know, whatever. And then basically our team commissioned a special because we were seeing this kind of thing doing well on the platform. Very, what would seem
so niche. You commissioned an original
one-off special, Wynonna Earp.
Okay.
It's not out yet, but we announced the teaser in February. We got over 600 million video views on organic social from that fan base going nuts because they're so excited to consume that content. That's an example where, like, if we didn't have those signals, there is no world in which we would have chosen and identified that title. And the truth is, if you look at what people are watching on Tubi, it is a lot of different things. It is everything from silent movies to Korean dramas to UFO docs to Italian horror. It's everything. And
yeah, I
think that is what is working.
It's pretty amazing. There's like lots of UFO stuff, some Bigfoot stuff. Pretty amazing stuff. Last question, and I don't know if you even get this question a lot, but we talk a lot on the show about the kind of crisis of leadership in Hollywood and how the people who run the town are older and have sort of been in the same entrenched jobs for a long time. And here you are, a young CEO. You have a boss at Fox, but you are running a unit here, and you are 40 years old. What is the problem here? Why are you the outlier in this business? And what should the industry be doing to attract the best and brightest of young executive talent?
That's a meaty one.
sorry to put the whole weight of the industry on your back.
Gee, thanks, Matt. Look, I do think that we are in an industry that is facing, structural change and needs to reinvent itself. And I'm sure biased, but I believe that you do need to have more young people who can represent the generation that you are looking to serve in order to reinvent yourself. And the reason isn't because it's cool to have younger people. It's just because it takes a conviction and an instinct to take risks when you don't know if it's going to work. And it's just easier when you have the naivete of youth and you're not so used to doing one thing really, really well. So I would just say, if the industry, if we can look at that, it's just a smart business decision, just a good business investment if you have to evolve and reinvent yourself to make sure you have people in the seats who are going to be inclined to do that well. It becomes an easier thing to invest in. It's just good business. And that's what I think we have an opportunity to better demonstrate. And hopefully Tubi will be able to kind of do things differently in service of that next generation of audiences. And we'll be a good example of that. But do I think it needs to happen? Absolutely. And it will. It will.
All right. Anything you want to tell us about your upfront presentation? Give us your pitch to the advertisers.
Tubi is free entertainment for the cordless generation.
And Bigfoot fans.
UFOs. And you should also watch it and you should give us your money.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Anjali, for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt.
We are back with the call sheet. Greg, are you following the latest in the NBA TV rights drama?
Yeah, I am. I'm actually excited for the NBA to go to streaming if the Amazon rumors are true.
So there was some reporting last week. My colleague at Puck, John Arand, reported that ESPN/Disney had essentially worked out what it's going to get from the NBA. They're going to get the A package, according to John, and essentially re-up their deal. They're going to keep the NBA finals on ABC, which was a big priority of the NBA. And they're going to get, a big package of games, maybe fewer than they currently have, but they're going to get a big package. And then Amazon is going to take a big package. There was a follow-up report from The Athletic the next day. This is Amazon has worked out their framework where they're going to get not only regular season games, but some playoff games as well. And that is a big change.
Yeah, look, I'm just excited. Even with TNT and Max right now, I love watching games on Max even. I watched March Madness on Max. I find sports on streaming to be so lovely and convenient that I don't care where it ends up as long as it's on streaming, to be quite honest.
You love that, yes. So that leaves NBC/NBC Universal, Comcast, and Warner Brothers Discovery, TNT, that leaves them as the potential bidders/odd men out for that final package. Now, they could do four packages. The NBA supposedly prefers to do three, but there's a real chance here that Warner Discovery does not get NBA rights in the next deal. And if it does get NBA rights, the amount of games is going to be very, very small, likely. So my prediction is that inside the NBA, the Turner Studio show that everybody loves, that will not exclusively air on TNT after the 2024-25 season. It's either going to be on Amazon or it's going to be on TNT and another one of those outlets, Amazon or NBC.
NBC?
Yeah, if NBC gets that third package, they're going to need a studio show, right? So they're going to probably go after those guys to bring them over. And Amazon will probably want to bring them over as well.
Yeah, I mean, with the pockets of Amazon, it feels like that's an easy win for them. I mean, they grabbed Kirk Herbstreit, now Michaels for football. Them going to get Chuck and all them makes so much sense. And I think it's probably better there anyway.
That makes sense. Yeah, it's probably better there. And they could do a thing where maybe they share that show with TNT, which is less competitive than if it goes to NBC and they have to share with another TV network.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think once these new rights deals are officially announced, Do you think there will be any NBA games starting in 2026 that are only on broadcast?
Probably not, because I think that this deal that Disney wants theirs for like 10 years. So they are contemplating a world where there is increasingly smaller and smaller numbers on linear. They got to have a streaming option. They don't want to get into a situation like the NFL has, where some of their games are on Fox and Fox does not have a streaming service and has no plans to create a streaming service. Now they're trying to do that joint venture. So the NBA, I think, wants, you know, where even if the finals are airing on ABC, this new ESPN over the top product that they're going to launch next year, they want the games to also air on that service. So you have maximum reach for the finals, similar to how the playoffs and Super Bowl, if they're on CBS, they also air on Paramount Plus. And that's, I think, the most beneficial to the NBA. And to the services. I mean, ESPN would do that with Monday Night Football right now, but they have, you know, they're locked in with the cable carriage companies that don't want it to be on streaming. So they're trying to redo those deals and get out of that.
Yeah. And, you know, if you don't have cable and you can't watch Fox football games, the only thing you really can do is like you go get a YouTube TV or a Sling TV or something, which is why everybody loves YouTube TV right now.
Exactly. If they're going to put so many games on streaming only, they want to make sure that the linear games can also be watched on streaming. And, you know, the TNT games could be on Max. The NBC games could be on Peacock, and the ABC games, ESPN games could be on whatever service Disney watches. So I think, honestly, the TNT show, everybody recognizes it's the best. They will figure out a way to make the NBA happy and make sure that that show gets onto whatever platform has a big package of games. And also, TNT did a huge deal with those guys. They did a multi-year, you know, $100 million deal to keep those guys together. And if TNT doesn't have the games, they're going to want to move that to some other outlet that does.
I'm excited for the Chuck jokes about Amazon, whatever they are. I'm ready for them. I think there's going to be a lot of Charles Barkley jokes about how Shaq needs the quadruple ply toilet paper.
All right, enough about Charles Barkley. That's the show for today. I want to thank my guest, Anjali Sood. I want to thank producer Craig Horlbeck, our editor Jesse Lopez, and I want to thank you. We will see you tomorrow with Lucas. We're going all in on Paramount. So we'll see you then. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.